You are listening to Eastside Radio Podcast.
89.7 FM, Eastside Radio.
I'm particularly delighted and honoured today to be joined by the independent member for Wentworth in the Australian Parliament, Allegra Spender. Re-elected to the federal parliament earlier this year, it's fair to say she's established herself as a very strong voice on integrity, climate action, and building a modern, forward-looking economy. And these are not insignificant issues. As an independent member, without the resource base that the major parties have available to them, tackling those issues is actually a big deal. Representing the electorate of Wentworth, and that's around about 155,000 of us, Allegra has been at the forefront of the push for cleaner energy, tax reform, and ensuring that communities are included in shaping Australia's future. And what more do you need from your local member? Let's have a chat to Allegra to see what she's been up to since last time we spoke. Allegra Spender, welcome back to Monday Drive.
Thanks so much for having me, Alan. I always am delighted to be on your show.
Well, we're always delighted to have you, and we appreciate the time you give us. Allegra, under the Climate Change Act for 2022, the federal government is required to set a 2035 greenhouse gas emissions reduction target with advice provided by the Climate Change Authority. A range of 65 to 75% reduction below 2005 levels by 2035 has been speculated. Is that what you're hoping for?
Look, I would really like to see us make commitments at the top end of the range advocated by the Climate Change Authority. So at the moment, the Climate Change Authority is putting forward its final assessment about what Australia should be committing to, both in terms of the science, but also in terms of the economy and how to manage that transition. Their interim report said it could be 65% to 75% reduction by 2035. Yep. The government is getting the final report, and I want to see the government make a commitment at the top end of that range when the Climate Change Authority comes out. And you know, this is really important, particularly on a day like today where we've had a National Climate Risk Assessment report just come out showing how much how vulnerable Australia is to rising temperatures, even to communities in this local area, suburbs like Darlinghurst, Double Bay, Darling Point. We're particularly seen as vulnerable to rising sea levels, as well as more broadly all of us being subject to, vulnerabilities relating to more extreme weather events.
Yeah. You know, something that I've scratched my head about many times, we keep putting the wood on the federal government to achieve those targets. But isn't it actually businesses and its investment policies that will impact the actual outcomes more than simply government decree?
Look, it's actually got to be a team event. I think government can't change it on its own, but certainly business has a massive role to play. But also government provides the guardrails and the incentives, both the sort of carrots and the sticks throughout the economy. So I think that the government's role is really important here. We've got the different parts of our emissions. Big sector is our electricity sector. That's in an area where we're actually, making some really good progress in reducing our emissions. Then there's the industrial sector. But again, you've got to have the right incentives, I think, for the sort of big emitters to reduce their emissions, and that's where things like the government policy and the safeguard mechanism is really important. And there are things like transport emissions, where again, government policy has a really important part to play, as well as people's individual choices and the choices of business.
Yeah, you mentioned the energy sector there. I think everybody's a little bit peed off with the energy companies' skyrocketing prices, but if pressure is put on them to reduce their emissions, aren't they just likely to increase the price of the power they supply us?
Well, I think we've got to understand what's driving electricity prices. And a lot of the big increase in the last couple of years, the big drivers of higher electricity prices, have been actually higher fossil fuel prices. So the war in Ukraine really spiked the price of gas and coal because of, you know, restrictions, for instance, in terms of Russia's exports. And so that's actually been a big driver of those increased prices. So when people are, you know, worried, there's a lot of, I think, misinformation out there, some disinformation too, where people are saying, oh, it's actually because, you know, we're asking the electricity sector to take on more renewables. That's what's driving higher prices. So we need to sort of really get the facts straight there. We do need to, however, transition our electricity sector. And the truth is, if we leave everything to the last minute and, you know, don't have the right policy environment, that's when prices can go up. You know, we should have been planning this transition for a long time. If you try and build lots of transmission lines and lots of things really quickly, that's more expensive. And also, if you don't have the right environmental laws, so it's really hard to build some things, that also makes it more expensive. So we have to kind of get those government signals right. But we need to get onto it now, because we've kept on kicking this can down the road, and it does get more expensive for consumers if we don't do something right now.
Yeah, well, talking about timelines and kicking things down the road, is there a chance we'll get to net zero by 2050?
I believe we will. Look, I'm actually a big technology optimist. You know, you're looking at how fast costs have come down, particularly in solar, wind, and batteries, and that's been really remarkable. And I think that's the exciting story. That's the really positive story, and you can see that actually in terms of what consumers do. You know, people who've got the lowest power bills, you know, in the country right now are those people who've got solar on the roof and a battery in the garage. You know, those people have both security of how much they're paying, but they also have some of the cleanest energy in our country. So what we need to be doing is continuing, you know, we need to be continuing to invest and helping households get more secure power bills. And to be honest, those sorts of actions, particularly all those consumer batteries that are going in, there's now 50,000 people across the country who have got cheaper batteries in because of federal government incentives, some of which I've been really pushing. Yeah. You know, those batteries actually help manage the grid. They help provide that storage in the grid, which means that, you know, when the sun's not shining, you can still get electricity, and that actually helps keep the energy prices down. Yeah. So I do believe we can get to 2050 and net zero, but we need to be consistent in our policies. We need to have ambition at the federal government level, and then we need everybody to work together on this, you know, businesses, but also households, all on the same page.
Yeah, that's great news to hear it's all happening locally. But I wonder, do our targets even matter when we're playing in a global playground with influences like global supply chains and countries who simply don't have the same agenda as we do and as responsible countries do?
Yeah. I think Australia does matter, and I think we matter, you know, a couple of different ways. One is our own emissions. You know, they're not, you know, just our direct emissions, you know, what we emit in this country. You know, they may be only a couple of percentage points, but, you know, Australia's always been a good global citizen, and you don't just say, well, I'm not going to do anything just because I'm not the biggest, you know, I don't have the big numbers. Because, you know, if you add up all the countries like Australia, those sort of mid-tier countries, we make a huge contribution to global emissions. So we can't just write ourselves off. The second piece is that Australia's actually a real is also a leader, and let's be honest, on some areas where we do lead, we're lead in fossil fuel exports. So if we're massive exporters of fossil fuels and we're not actually helping, you know, our energy partners reduce their emissions over time, you know, we do have a much bigger impact. And also, and on a good side, if we can help decarbonize something like steel production, which is one of the most carbon intensive activities across the world, which I think represents around 7 to 9% of global emissions, if we can actually get green iron working in this country, then we have an opportunity to make an enormous difference in terms of emissions, you know, both locally but also globally. And, you know, I'm hoping we're going to host COP31 next year, so this is our chance to put the issue on the world stage. And to make sure that Australia is, you know, leading with moral authority, but also, you know, from an economic point of view as well. So I think we need to be serious about this, and also need to remember this is not just an economic issue, not an environmental issue. This is like a massive security issue for Australia as well. So, you know, you could ignore what we have to do, but honestly, this is existential for our Pacific neighbours, and our Pacific neighbours are absolutely key to our own security as well.
All strength to you in pushing that agenda. There has been a lot of talk lately about how we look after our, or don't look after our ageing community. Now, I have a vested interest in this, Allegra. what's going on with finding some resources to provide extra aged home care packages?
Yeah, this is something I'm really proud of having worked on over the last year, because I'll be honest, so many people come up to talk to me about home care packages. Interestingly, I was just up at Five Ways the other day doing a pop-up office, as I try and do every week, somewhere popping up somewhere in the electorate, and two different people came up to me to talk about home care packages. You know, one man who'd been allocated a home care package, and he was like, great, you know, when's it going to start? And they're like, oh, well, somewhere 9 to 12 months. And he just couldn't understand it. He's like, you know, they have assessed that I need this support. This support is really important. It helps keep me healthy. It helps keep me out of hospital. It helps keep me out of aged care. But the government's acknowledge I need the support, but isn't giving me actually the support that I need when I need it. And, you know, I think I hear that from a lot of actually families as well, who go, you know, my father, my mum, you know, my friend, my uncle, my aunt has been assessed as needing this. When that need has been identified, why are there such long waits? And we are talking about waits up to 9 to 12 months to get the home care package once you've actually been assessed for it.
Yeah.
So I've really been pushing for this, as have many crossbenchers. And there was a big push just after the election by David Pocock, who said, you know, we should be trying to get another 20,000 of these packages online ASAP.
That's right.
You know, the government was resisting, then the coalition got on board, and the government couldn't push it through the Senate. And so actually in the last week of Parliament, there was, you know, back down from the government, they accepted they needed to release these extra 20,000 of packages and to bring forward another 63,000 packages to get those into the community earlier. And I think this is it's a credit to community action. It's credit to all those people who spoke up and talked to me about this, and to spoke up and talk to people across the country about this. It's such a big issue, and it makes a really material difference to lots of people living in this area.
And who said the independents have no influence?
Yeah, you see, I mean, that's the point. And that's what I think is a big job for me, is to be listening to the community and putting issues on the table and putting pressure and working with everyone. Because I think the truth is, you know, I'm not ashamed of, you know, working with the coalition, working, you know, with the government, working across the parliament to drive the change that needs to be driven. And you saw that in question time, actually, in relation to home care packages. You know, you got questions from the crossbench, you got questions from the opposition. It actually helped build the pressure. You got motions in the Senate. It was collective action across the parliament that really drove that change and accountability to government.
Yeah. I want to talk to you about social cohesion, because it's becoming more and more an issue on everyone's mind, given particularly not only events here locally in Australia, but around the world as well, particularly anti-discrimination, anti-Semitism, asylum seeker treatment and so on.
Yeah.
Have these matters received any specific attention in Canberra of late?
I think there's a lot of concern about this, and it's certainly, I spoke to Anne Alley. I met her at the last sitting week. She's the Minister, among other things, for Multicultural Affairs. And we talked about how do we build social cohesion. We talked about how do we just bring different parts of our community together, looking particularly at things like cultural events and, you know, cultural organisations, and how to connect them all. And I had just today, actually, a forum of many of the school leaders in our community around this very topic, about, you know, how do we help our young people look after each other and stick together. And, you know, part of the focus was about anti-Semitism, because we have the biggest Jewish community in the country. And, you know, we do have, as one person described, you know, his own experience of walking along the street with his daughter on the weekend, and someone stopped at the lights and yelled out to him and his daughter, effing Jews, and you know, saying, you know, and his daughter was like, why are they doing this to me? So, you know, I know people are really upset at this. We also had last week the Islamophobia special envoy released his report in relation to, you know, the discrimination against Muslim people, particularly Muslim women. You know, we've had people who are targeting Indian refugees, not even refugees, sorry, Indian migrants, and, you know, saying all sorts of things about Indian migrants in our country as well. So there are, I think, some negative forces out there at the moment, and there some of them are, you know, coming from the political class, but there are also other issues out there. And
I wonder there, Allegra, whether you said you're talking to a lot of youth in the schools and so on.
Yeah.
What is your feeling? Do they get it, or do you have optimism that the future generations will be perhaps even kinder or more amenable to this whole issue of cohesion as opposed to destruction?
I think there is a lot of, I mean, I think I spend a lot of time with young people in Wentworth, and I think they are very alive to issues of discrimination, but also they do sometimes make some poor choices, I'll be honest, and I think that's the point of the adults in the room, is helping people understand what those poor choices are, but also trying the adults being good examples, which I don't think we genuinely are, particularly around disagreeing well. So I think we do, I think I have a lot of optimism with the kids, but kids, you know, we need to start with empathy. And as someone was describing to me today, start with relations. You know, there are some, start just understanding each other, you know, start to finding what holds, you know, what's your common ground. You know, I was given a lovely example today about some schools working together on making bread around Easter and Passover, and recognising actually that the traditions on making bread around this are very similar across Christian and Jewish cultures. Now, there are a lot of, there's a lot of common ground against across many religions, including particularly the monotheistic religions of, you know, Islam, Christianity and Judaism. And so trying to understand and build on the common ground is a really, really important part. And trying to start by, you know, disagreeing well, which means listening with empathy, starting with respect for who you're listening to. And even if, you know, you don't change your mind, you hold on to your views, making sure you try and understand where somebody else is coming from, I think is really important right now, and it's something that we need to cultivate strongly in our young people and strongly, I think, across the country, including very much in our politicians.
Yeah. We're talking about social cohesion, and there's another angle I want to take on social cohesion. The week after Father's Day is known as Sheds Week, Men's Shed Week.
Yes.
And, you know, in terms of social cohesion, there are 1,300 sheds nationwide, and they're building healthy, strong communities, and they have a very important role to play. And good on them for celebrating Men's Shed Week last week. However, there is a shadow cast over it, and that is the fact that Waverley Men's Shed is without a home. Now, we mentioned this a few weeks ago with you. Now, the Men's Shed has done everything they can to try to bring to conclusion the fact that they're homeless. And not only are they not able to provide the services to the community that they would like to, but the mental health and the well-being of the men themselves, who enjoy coming to that shed and fostering relationships and keeping active in retirement, it's all up in the air. Now, I understand Dan Repicioli, who is the former Olympian, who's a colleague of yours in the federal Parliament, has been appointed as a special envoy for men's health. Can you clout him over the head and ask him to deliver something for the Waverley Men's Shed before that number of important institutions diminishes?
They are a really important institution. I've had the great privilege to come and visit the Men's Shed on a number of occasions, and I think you're absolutely right, Alan. It is that connection that people build across different backgrounds, different perspectives, They're different journeys that take them to being there at the men's shed. But what they provide is an opportunity for men to come together, to talk about, you know, where they are at, and to learn skills and have connection and purpose. And it's wonderful. You know, they do amazing things in terms of also building, you know, resources for schools and childcare centres and other institutions. So they're an incredible group of people. And, you know, we've been in touch with their... you know, with the men's shed, they are still looking for a place. There have been a few false starts in places that have been offered but aren't quite right. So, I mean, the first thing I want to do is just appeal to everybody out there in the community. You know, they're looking for... ideally a place, you know, their current shed's about 170 square metres. They're looking for something, you know, ideally between 200 and 300 square metres.
That's right. They're at capacity at the moment with their 170.
Yes, exactly right. So they're looking for something bigger if they can get it. There will ultimately be a site, but it's not going to be for, I think, 7 to 10 years. So they are looking for an interim site, ideally within the eastern suburbs, though they're sort of looking, you know, beyond into Alexandria and others if they need to. Spoken to Marjorie O'Neill, spoken to Waverley Council, reaching out to Willara Council, trying to find all those different options. And I will speak to Dan, and I was just thinking today maybe I need to talk to Defence and see if they've got any pockets of land, because it is about trying to find, you know, a piece of land or, you know, part of a building that doesn't have any sort of short-term plans, where this really great group of men can come together. Because we know we've got 18,000 men over the age of 65. These are mainly older men in Wentworth, and so many would like to be part of this group.
Yes, indeed. In fact, many of them have had their membership applications rejected simply on the basis of lack of space, but now they have zero space. So
I agree.
As much as I'm delighted to talk to you every month, be assured that it'll be on the agenda for next month's chat too.
It's on my agenda too. Yeah. Absolutely, Alan. It's such an important issue, and it's one that we keep on pursuing as well, to try and find that pocket of land. Federally, I don't have many pockets of land up my sleeve. That's why I would start with the councils.
Well, you do.
But it could be in a church, it could be somewhere, it could be in that sort of community facility.
You did mention some Defence land, and that's on, is it Bunurong Road or Anzac Parade leading out to Maroubra? Bundock Avenue, is that's a Defence?
I think there is Defence land around. So that's one I was just thinking. I was just thinking today. Maybe I will. I was out actually at Garden Island this morning. I don't think they'll manage to find a spot at Garden Island. But I did make me think maybe I will. I'm going to reach out to Defence and see if there's any land around here from a Defence point of view that might be right.
That's great. Thank you for your continuing efforts on that very important subject. I'm speaking with Allegra Spender, the independent member for Wentworth in the federal parliament. Now, Allegra, I understand that you've resorted to conducting major tax reform business of the Australian government in the pub.
No, this is the depths I've sunk to, Alan. This is no.
tell me about your visit to the pub tonight.
Thank you so much. Well, yes, we're doing politics in the pub tonight, with a particular focus on tax reform. So down in Double Bay, because you know, for me, this is about how do you do politics differently, and how do you do politics in a way that engages people. And you have to meet people where they are, and they are often in the pub or in our community spaces. So I held last month a tax reform in Parliament with some of Australia's leading economists and thinkers. They say, you know, what are the options that should be on the table, and pros and cons. We had about 100 people there debating and asking questions and things like that. I'm doing a mini version of this tonight, having Chris Richardson, who's an eminent economist, also speaking. He and I are going to be doing a politics in the pub, talking about tax and giving people a chance to answer any question, as well as pitch different perspectives on this, because tax and you know, those major issues facing us in the country, you know, you can't just decide them in Canberra. You have to be listening and engaging with the community, and that's what I'm going to be doing tonight. So please come down if you're keen. It should be a good discussion.
I thought you were about to say if you're thirsty.
Well, sure. You do get a free drink. It's at the Royal Oak in Double Bay. So please come down if you can, and we'll be having that conversation tonight.
Are you happy with the conduct and the outcomes of the tax forum that the Treasurer convened recently?
Yeah, well, I was very proud to, and very, I think, honoured to be part of that economic reform roundtable the Treasurer conducted.
Yeah.
You know, with in the cabinet rooms last month. I think the outcomes are good for where they are now. Now it comes down to the hard job, though, of making them happen. So I think the government outlined, you know, some really key areas of reform, and they put finally tax reform properly on the table as an area of attention. And they've been reluctant to do that for the last 3 and a bit years. And so I'm very proud that I think through sustained pushing and through myself and others, we finally got the government to recognise that tax reform is really important, and it matters both to our productivity of our businesses, it matters to our young people being able to thrive and get ahead. So it really does matter. But I think now the question is turning that acknowledgement into reality and into the sort of reform we needed. And that's certainly what the work I'm doing is doing the further work in terms of the more detailed planning of what I believe is needed next, as well as continuing to put pressure on the government to face up to this and to start to put forward their ideas on the table so that the community can really get behind it and engage, have their voices heard, but also see this happen.
Okay, just finally, because I'm very aware of the generosity of your time that you're offering us, around about 261,000 e-bikes were imported into the country in 2000. No, that's not right. Recently anyway.
Yes, it was. It's about that number.
Yeah.
In the 2000, I think it's 2023-24.
23-24, that's right. Yeah. Now, Dr. Sophie Scamps introduced the Road Vehicle Standards Bill into Parliament recently. And I guess the reason for doing so was to try to address the extraordinary number of accident injuries that they're causing, meaning the e-bikes themselves, and probably the number of fires being caused by exploding batteries as well. Under that bill, e-bikes are brought under federal jurisdiction so that federal rules apply to things like safety standards and anti-tampering protections. What are your thoughts on the effectiveness of Dr. Scamps' bill?
Look, I'm very proud to support Dr. Scamps's bill. And so let's, Liam, to track back, e-bikes are great, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I've met so many people who said, you know, they transform, you know, what me and my family can do. You know, I'm no longer driving here. I can get around. I've never felt able really, you know, Sydney and particularly around here, it's pretty hilly. You know, sometimes it's the sort of geography's been a barrier to people who genuinely do want to engage in this form of transport. And we know that it's clean, we know that it's healthy. I mean, they're great on principle. However, I know at the same time, there are a bunch of concerns, and particularly concerns out there in terms of our young people. I know that I have lots of people come up to talk to me in the street and say, I'm really worried about kids going really fast on these e-bikes, particularly these fat tyre bikes.
Yeah.
Where, you know, the limiter of speed has been tampered with. These kids are effectively riding motorbikes. They're riding them on the pavements. And I'm worried for the safety of the kids, and I'm worried about the safety of pedestrians. And I'm worried about, you know, these imports and who's importing and these standards and what's going on. Now, New South Wales government has done a review into this and made a bunch of recommendations, because a lot of road safety is actually a state-based,
right.
State-based legislation. However, the standards in terms of importing bikes and in terms of the overall kind of regulatory framework of what sort of types of vehicles are included under certain frameworks does sit with the federal government. And New South Wales and Victoria actually asked the federal government to take action in their space. And that's why Sophie Scamps has put forward this bill, which I'm completely back, because we do need to make sure when, you know, those bikes are being imported, that you do have ability to limit the speeds, and those speed limiters can't be easily tampered with, so they don't turn into, these sorts of motorbikes. And we do need to make sure these bikes, which are coming in big numbers, I think it's 10 times what they were, you know, 5 years ago, they do meet national safety standards. That's kind of what I think the community expects. So I think Sophie's really addressing a need that has been identified by the states, a real gap in the federal legislation, and I'm 100% behind her in pushing this and the government on this.
Okay, Allegra, thank you so much for spending time with us today, and good luck at the pub tonight.
Thanks so much, Alan. Have a great afternoon.
7 FM, Eastside Radio.
You have been listening to Eastside Radio Podcast. For selections of more enjoyable content like this, visit our website, eastsidefm.org, and click on Podcast.